Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey, friends, it's the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm Ben.
This is Matt.
Ben.
Yeah, all right, we're all here. Friends, we're trying to do like a Radiolab intro. If you guys listen to Radiolab, where
is that what
like,
they're doing?
Yeah. Well, they're I kinda like their intros where they're
nailed it.
I think we totally nailed it. I think the delay of having you in Atlanta makes it difficult, but you know, they're always like, hey, it's Jad, it's Rob, it's Radiolab, or whatever.
Robert.
Yeah.
I've never actually listened to it.
No, it's a good,
it's pretty good podcast.
Yeah, they do a good job.
Yeah. So anyway.
Good job, Shad.
Those guys are getting better and better.
They're getting there as far as podcasts go. Well, friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
What are we doing here?
We're glad that you've chosen to spend some time with us. This is great. You've clicked on an episode that says, is there room for tough love in grace and truth? We talk a lot about grace and truth, and we get questions every once in a while. Somebody will email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com.
Yep.
And they ask questions, and that was a question that someone emailed us and asked, and so we did an episode on it.
We actually have, I feel a little like we've been delinquent. We have several questions in the queue.
Yeah, we've got them in our little...
we haven't forgotten you.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten you. So, but if you have new questions...
Email us. Let us know.
Yeah. podcast@gravityleadership.com.
And so, is there room for tough love and grace and truth? You can listen to the episode, but spoiler alert.
There is.
Oh.
Oh, what were you going to say?
I was going to say no.
No. Grace and truth is about being nice, and you can never... Yeah. Well, it depends on what you mean by tough love. I think we probably nuance it. We tend to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Let's get to the episode. What do we got?
Get to the episode, any first... Yeah. Two announcements. We're still booking workshops for 2020. We've got several conversations going there. Hardman, say a little bit more about that. What are workshops? What are we doing there?
Yeah, we're booking workshops, and they're great, and you should book one.
Yes.
We're doing the Enneagram workshop, which we just finished a series on the Enneagram, a mini series on the Enneagram. If that tickled your fancy or was interesting to you,
yes.
We would love to come out and spend some time with your team and talk to you about that.
Yep.
We're doing Parenting in Grace and Truth, which tackles some of the kind of issues that we're going to actually talk about today. Yep. Is there room for tough love in parenting in Grace and Truth, Matt?
Yes. I mean, no.
No, no. See, no, there's not.
No. Maybe. Yes, no. Maybe. Yeah. And so we're doing those workshops. We're booking those for 2020 and have a lot of places that we're kind of already going to and heading to. It's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And then don't forget about our membership community on Patreon. That's a way, if you appreciate this podcast, if you want to partner with us in the work, that's a way for you to support us. And there's also some really cool perks that we've got on that platform, including the Practitioner Podcast, which is a lot of fun. We just did, I think the latest episode we released of the Practitioner Podcast is I've Made a Huge Mistake, Part 2.
Yep, there's a lot of them, though. This is will not be a mini-series.
Yeah, this will be a maxi-series.
A macro-series.
We're going to talk more and more about it. But the Practitioner Podcast is where we can share a little bit more intimately, a little bit more deeply with a kind of a smaller community of those who we know are kind of with us in this journey. And so if that interests you, there's also, you can get free access to all of our online courses. We've got a number of those that you get free access to if you support us at $30 or more a month. But there's all kinds of interesting goodies there. So for the workshops, go to gravityleadership.com/workshops. For the membership community, go to patreon.com/gravityleadership.
And prepare your ear holes.
And you guys are heading to St. Louis next week for some consulting too?
Yeah.
A couple hours south of St.
Louis. By the time
this
comes out, it will be this week. Yeah. Yep. We're leaving Thursday. We're going to be down there working with a church in Missouri.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I've been coaching the senior pastor there, and they're doing some amazing work. So
yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's fun. That's
also something we do, consulting.
Yep.
So if you're interested in that, check it out.
All right.
We'll put all that stuff in the show notes, friends. Anything else to say?
No.
All right.
Enjoy
this
episode.
Yep. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. This is Matt. I'm with Ben and Ben.
Yep, the Bens and the Matt.
The Bens.
We're here.
Hey, that's a great album, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Radiohead.
The Bens?
I know what you're talking about.
They named it after us.
Yep, they did.
I think it was a
they
D did.
We there. Were, the, yeah, the Bens. It's the it's the disease you get or the condition you get when you come up from the deep places of the ocean too quickly.
What a great word, like what a great metaphor, what a picture for an album.
Yeah, totally.
You're coming up out of the depths too quickly.
Yeah.
Man,
Radiohead.
All right, I'm going to go listen to
one
Radiohead.
Of my favorite
you guys
bands.
Do this podcast.
Right, one of my favorite bands. All right, so hey guys, we're going to do a Q&A episode here. Every once in a while, people email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. If you want to email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com, please do. We'd love to hear from you. Got some weird, like... I was going to say, like...
Fake plastic trees.
Oh, yeah, this is a classic.
This is on the Bens.
I was like, somebody's, like, working their cell phone.
This
I hear weird...
This is one of the best Radiohead songs of all time.
We're going to get in so much trouble with some kind of copyright.
Right, right.
Yeah. I was just playing in the restaurant that we're in. We didn't press play on that.
The seminary I went to, the worship band... Uh-huh. Played Fake Plastic Trees as a meditation after a sermon once.
Ooh.
Like, so the congregation didn't sing it, but the chaplain made them change the one of the lyrics. She feels like the real thing. There's like this lyric of like, she looks like the real thing. Mm-hmm. She feels like the real thing.
Mm-hmm. What'd they change it to? Jesus is the real thing?
She looks like the real thing. She seems like the real thing.
That's what I would do.
I think that's what they
I would have changed it to Jesus.
She Jesus looks like the real thing.
Jesus is the
Jesus,
real.
Jesus, yeah, Jesus.
Just to remind you what this is all about.
No, friends, we are we're going to do a Q&A episode. Well, not a whole episode. We're just going
to
answer one question.
We ask you to send questions in, and you actually do send questions
in. You do send questions in, so we honor this.
We just
this.
Don't like all the questions. We only like some of the questions.
So if you've sent a question in, it went to spam because it was a bad question. No,
that's not true.
That's not true at all.
We love to get your questions. We're not answering all of them.
I actually have to check.
We guys, appreciate you sending the question.
So guys, listen.
Stop talking.
Listen. Here's the state of email these days.
I'm going to put Radiohead back on if you guys can't behave.
I actually have to. I have a task in my task list every week to check my spam folder because the forms that people fill out on our website, they keep going to spam. So I have to like check my spam folder to find people who are interested in coaching and who are asking questions about the podcast.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous.
Why is that?
Sounds exactly what a peacemaker would say when they're not answering someone's question.
All right. Why don't you read the question? Because we're getting to the bottom of the question.
Okay, so the question here is there room for tough love in Grace and Truth? So Tom Lyons asked this question. He said... you know, first of all, he was very affirming about our podcast. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you listening, and I'm glad you're helped by it. And he was asking a question.
That's a good way to get your question answered.
Right, right. Yeah. No, Tom's, I appreciate him saying that. So he said, I have a question that seems to remain unanswered so far in my listening of your podcast. Is there any place for tough love in your leading like Jesus, living on mission, and making disciples? And is there a time for the pursuit of justice in advocating for victims of abuse and oppression? Does that make that question make sense to you guys?
It makes sense to me, and I got lots of things to say.
Yeah. So
that's shocking.
So one of the ways I'd rephrase this is we talk a lot about grace and truth, and the kind of the combination of grace and truth. Learning to lead like Jesus means that we are full of grace and truth, like Jesus was and is full of grace and truth. But a lot of times people have a hard time imagining what that actually looks like, and so oftentimes what pops into people's heads is, that does that mean we're sort of nice?
Yeah.
Does that mean we're just nice to people? Is that what you mean? Like, is there room for... So I like his question. Like, is there room for tough love? And related to that, like advocating for victims of abuse and oppression. Like, is being nice to the oppressor, is that what you mean by love? Or is just being nice to people, is that what you mean by love? So, Matt, you want to start us off? What occurs to you as you hear that question?
Well, I think Jesus presents a model. So a lot of our training is Jesus is a model for what it means to be human. Mm. And he gives us he's the pioneer of a new humanity. So we can follow him into his humanity in a way that coheres and makes sense of how we're supposed to be human. So one of the things I would say about that is I think Jesus operates in his world as someone without power. Right? So he is.
What do you mean by that?
He's a marginalized minority from a despised part of his country.
Okay. Yeah. Can anything good come out of Nazareth?
So he's a Galilean, which Galilee was in the ancient area of Samaria. It was like wedged in between Samaria and pagan area. Uh-huh. And so a lot of people lived in Galilee were accused of being Samaritans that had moved north or Jewish people, Israelites, that had intermarried with pagans.
Yeah.
So they weren't faithful to Torah. They were half-bloods at best, and they didn't take place in the regular religious obligations of what it meant to be a faithful Jew, i.e. they weren't a part of daily or even seasonal sacrifices and oblations at the temple. Right?
Yeah,
so that's the first thing. So he was seen by the people who held power in his culture as being a blight.
Right, and even within the Jewish world, he wasn't like trained by the greatest rabbis.
No.
He was sort of from nowhere. Like, who trained you? Like, who gave you this authority?
Yeah.
It was that kind of challenge to his authority all the time.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay.
And I think additionally, his what we see emerge really soon after his death. And so, if it didn't exist during his life, although we get hints of this in the Gospels, it was very quickly after his death that his lineage was questioned. So there was this rumor that his mom was raped by a Roman soldier.
Mm. Yeah.
And so his actual sort of heritage and lineage was came from
called into question
this really despicable, despised.
Yeah.
You know, the spoiling of his mother.
Right.
And then Joseph was sort of just jumping on the shame grenade.
Why does that matter then in sort of help us connect the dots between Tom's question.
So honor, i.e. power and esteem in Israelite culture was given to someone based upon their ability to trace their lineage to ancient origins of like being a true Israelite, right? Paul talks about this in one of his letters. He says, I got all these reasons to boast, and he goes into his lineage. He goes into, I was trained under Gamaliel, I was first in my class, I'm kind of a baller theologically.
Yeah.
So this is something that Jews knew and held on to. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons why gospel stories start with the genealogy of Jesus that traces his lineage back to David.
Yes.
They're trying to solidify the fact that he actually did have credentials, legit credentials. But in his life, there was a bunch of, can anything good come from Galilee? Or, isn't this guy from Galilee? We all know that nothing good can come from Nazareth. Like, there was this sort of dismissal of Jesus because he was from the backwoods, intermarried, doesn't take Torah or temple seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Galilee.
Yeah.
Right? So Jesus was outside of the power structures of Rome. He wasn't a Sadducee. He wasn't a high priest. And Israel. He wasn't a Pharisee. He wasn't Gamaliel. He wasn't one of the rabbis. And so Jesus held a position of no power.
Okay.
Does that make sense? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jesus held a position of no power. Keep going.
So this I think this matters for at least the three of us, because as white dudes in America, we hold cultural and social power in our country. Like, our country is founded on the fact that that our ethnicity is superior to every other ethnicity.
Right.
I'm sorry if I'm the first person to tell you this, but this is
what might be called founding, white privilege.
The founding myth of America is that we actually deserve any and every piece of land that we can claim because we have superior cultural and mental architecture to seize it.
And we've designed that world that way. Great.
Yeah. So anyway, Jesus then speaks as a marginalized, powerless person to other marginalized, powerless people in what we would typically think of as grace and truth. So he's calling people in. He's empowering them. Even people within his culture who don't have tons of power, the synagogue leaders, rich young rulers, he's challenging them, crazy challenging them, but he's still offering. I mean, we're told explicitly in Luke's gospel that he looks at the rich young ruler and he loves him and he says, hey, one thing you lack, right? So Jesus is doing this. But then there's this section in Matthew, you can look it up if you want, Matthew 21 through 24, where Jesus gets, I think what we would describe as tough love. He gets a little...
You hypocrites,
you whitewashed tombs, right? So he goes after the Pharisees and the leaders of the people. And one of the common criticisms that we receive in our training is, well, where's there room for letting people have it like Jesus does the Pharisees in Matthew's gospel?
Okay.
And I would say several things about this.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
One is, Jesus is operating as a powerless person in his culture who has taken and tried to subvert the power structures of his day for years and years. We know at least 3 years, perhaps more before that. He is approaching his death, and he knows it. And so he speaks plainly about why their addiction and commitment to the kind of power they have is leading to their destruction.
Yeah, it's sort of a last-ditch effort, like, get out of the street, there's a car coming.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's operating in sort of this prophetic tradition of Israel, where prophets who are opposed and marginalized are speaking truth to...
Jeremiah.
Yeah.
That kind of tradition.
Yeah, that kind of tradition. And so I would say, like, yeah, if you find yourself as a marginalized person who is outside power structures... and you've been witnessing and subverting them obliquely and prophetically for years, and you are approaching your own sort of termination or demise, then yeah, speak plainly, speak truthfully. And you may not even be approaching it. You may just have been living under it your whole life, and you may know, I mean, many of us don't know when we're going to die, but you may just operate in speaking as a powerless person to power and saying, this is all crap, and I'm going to name it for what it is.
Yeah.
And I say, that's great.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I just want to, I'm getting to like my response, you know, 9 minutes later, is that most of the people who ask, is there room for tough love? They're not marginalized, powerless people.
Right.
They're people, and I don't know the question, I don't know who this person who came from.
Sure.
I'm not speaking.
Not a judgment about this person.
No, not at all. I don't know who you are at all. But most of the people that push back against this are people with power, who are used to speaking with power, who are used to putting people in their place.
Yeah.
Using their power to control and overpower people.
Right. So part of the answer is, like, is there room for tough love? Well, yes. But, right? So there's this asterisk that we're talking about where it's like part of what needs to be looked at here is what are the power dynamics in this relationship, right? That matters a lot.
That seems to matter a lot.
Right. So if I'm a marginalized person, tough love might look different than if I am a powerful person. And it needs
yes, but that's not different. Suggesting that if you're not a marginalized person, you can't speak to power in any way.
No,
we need people who actually have power to speak to power also, right? You would agree with that, correct?
The way Paul does mm-hmm. that in Corinth is that he has power. He's a Roman citizen. Yeah. He's got this elegant sort of training and pedigree. Mm-hmm. And he says in Corinth that he becomes all things to all people. We like to say that as like, hey, this is how we this is how we contextualize and become relevant. Mm-hmm. But what he's actually saying when he says I become all things to all people is I haven't made myself beholden to powerful people so that I have to do what they want.
Yeah.
He's saying I have decided to remain free from being a benefactor to any patron in Corinth so that I can call these wealthy benefactors in Corinth to account.
Yeah.
But he does that by not playing their game.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
He does that by subverting the entire structure they're built on.
Yeah.
Right? So I think there's a reimagining of what it means to prophetically stand against evil and misuse of power in our culture.
Yeah.
We've talked about this, guys, even today as we've been here. I think I'm most comfortable like verbally attacking things that are wrong. Hmm. And what I see Paul doing and Jesus doing is inhabiting evil, wrong cultures in subversive ways to let their wrongness and evil be revealed.
For what it is. Yeah.
And that challenges the junk out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have the patience or the character, probably, to do that.
Or the imagination.
Or the imagination to do that.
Yeah. Because, I'm thinking of, like, ultimately then, that's Jesus dying on the cross. That's the ultimate revelation of the evil of the power structures, right? But it cost him his life. it'd probably be a lot easier to throw some stones or denounce from a distance, right?
Well, you bring that up, and something I need to write on before I die. but Jesus actually connects his crucifixion to what's killing Israel.
Yeah.
And he does it in John 3. He says, no one has gone up. This is John 3:13 for those of you who are following along at home. No one has gone up to heaven except the one who came down from heaven, the human one, or the Son of Man. Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, so that everyone who believes in him will have eternal life. And then there's that, football verse. God so loved the world, he gave his only son. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is referencing that story in Numbers, right? Where the snakes are killing the Israelites. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes, help us, save us. And mm-hmm. Moses says, hey, God says, build this bronze snake and hold it up. Mm-hmm. And so Moses holds this bronze snake, this effigy, like builds this thing.
This picture of
what's killing you. And the Israelites stare at what's killing them, held and mediated by God's representative, mm-hmm. and when they face what's killing them, they're healed.
Yeah.
Jesus connects his crucifixion here to Moses lifting up the snake in the wilderness. So Jesus being lifted up on the cross is Moses being holding up the snake and the Israelites being saved.
Yeah.
So the salvific thing of the cross isn't just Jesus takes the penalty that we could not pay mm-hmm. or Jesus dies on our behalf, but it's behold what's killing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's and we see this in John 11 because the chief priest actually says, and John gives us sort of this, he didn't even know what he was saying, but he's right. Mm-hmm. It's better for one man to die than for the whole country to go down the toilet.
Yeah.
That's a paraphrase. I think that's the message. And so what's killing Israel is this need to have someone to blame and kill for our problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a brilliant theological sort of framework within which to think about some of these things. I wonder if it would be helpful to get a little bit more practical now to say, like, well, how does that then work out in everyday life? So what does it look like then to advocate for the oppressed, to advocate for justice? What does it look like to hold a boundary in grace and truth, like in love, that doesn't include, you know, yelling at someone or, you know, that kind of thing. So if we're going to try to operate in love, like in grace and truth, what does that actually look like then? Yeah, like how, what does, you know, so I think the the explicit answer to your question, Tom, is yes. Like grace and truth does include what we might call tough love. But tough love isn't the same thing as sort of yelling at people.
The way culture defines it.
Yeah. It's not sort of yelling at people or coercing people. But what does that look like? I wonder if either of you have a story, an example that you can come up with that maybe gives people an imagination. I think that's what a lot of people are lacking, is just an imagination.
Yep.
Like, what might this look like for me to actually engage like Jesus, to open up space for people to see reality, even if it's hard for them, but to love them in a way that isn't just being nice to them so that they feel good, but love them so that they can see reality, even if that sort of stings a bit. That makes sense?
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
That's what's lacking a lot of times for people.
Well, so for me, it occurs to me that recently there was a person in my life that was coming to my church, but we've told this story on our practitioner podcast, and I don't want to go into the details here, but there was somebody at our church who was doing things like publicly shaming me. So would scoff and roll his eyes when I would lead our liturgy, and would I would tell him, here's my intention, here's what I want, and he would tell me, I don't believe you, and he would continually relate to me in ways that weren't clean with what I was saying and what I was desiring. And so I spent a lot of time just saying to this person, hey, here's what I want. I'm asking you to treat me in this way. And he continually refused to do it.
Yeah.
And so eventually, what my submitting to him and asking him to honor me wasn't working. And so I had to simply pivot to, you can't treat me like this anymore.
Yeah.
This isn't good for you, for me, or for our church.
Yeah.
I just had to tell him, no, you can't do that anymore. Yeah. And when you do it, I'm committing to you to let you know that that's not okay.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's what Tom's asking about.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, when someone doesn't respond to the grace you're giving them, you have to tell them, you can't continue to take grace from me and pervert it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? That's a good example. Yeah. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I was just thinking of how often there are people that I'm in relationship with, and I don't want to go into any real specific details, but people that are playing a specific game that I'm just refusing to engage in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
So they're wanting me to have a conversation at this level, like they're wanting to have a hot conversation with me, and I just kind of am saying I'm going to refuse to have that conversation at that level. But that doesn't mean I also don't set a boundary that says, no, we're not going to do it right there.
Well, that is,
you know, that happens. Great examples. I got teenage sons, right? And so, like, often my teenage sons are trying to engage me in a specific way that I just have to say, boys, we're not going to have the conversation here. You know, I'm going to be the thermostat here, and I'm going to set the temperature of where we're going to have the conversation rather than allowing you to rile me up and rather than me following you up and down.
Yeah.
That's a parenting thing that I do, but it's also something I have to do as a pastor all the time.
Yeah.
We're not going to have the conversation here. I know that you want to have that conversation here, but we're not. So it's the non-anxious presence, right? You know, Jesus, John chapter 1, is full of both grace and truth, which means that that's not a technique that he uses to get what he wants. It's not manipulative. It's not coercive. Yeah. It's not the sandwich method, which we're taught in management, right?
More about the sandwich method.
Right. So you say something nice and then something negative and then something nice. So, you know, Matt, really good. Talk about...
Thank you.
Jesus today. And I'd really like for you not to yell at me so much. And also, I really like your shirt.
No, right? It'd be like, hey, Sharon, my wife. Hey, Sharon, I really appreciate all the dishes you do in our house. When you talk to me about my weaknesses, I want to like punch the wall, and it's unhelpful for me at all. By the way, your perfume smells really nice.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the sandwich method.
I'd like to kiss you.
Want to make out?
Yeah. Although that might not be a positive. Yeah. No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like the deposit reward kind of thing, right?
Right.
You got to make a certain, I got to make a certain amount of deposits mm-hmm. before I make a withdrawal, right?
Where, right.
That drives me crazy when I hear that in marriages.
Yeah.
Right. You just got to, like, so if I want something from Sarah, I've got to, like, manipulate my way into it and think about how many times I have to make these. That's using grace and truth as a method of manipulation and control and coercion.
It's bankrupt.
And so for me, it's not that manipulative method of I want to get what I want,
but
it is defining where the conversation is going to take place.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go there with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm not, you know, like even as in setting boundaries, I'm not going to be that type of pastor for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Being clear about that is part of love. Yeah.
So for me, being able to say, this is a really redemptive phrase. I think I've said this on the podcast before, but being able to say, so our church is growing rapidly. Like mm-hmm. we started a couple years ago with just a few people and it's grown really rapidly. And I'm just realizing I can't keep track of everybody relationally right now.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to say to people, I am terribly sorry that I've disappointed you.
Because they want you to be there.
They want
sort
me
of
to be there and everything. There's like a Southern thing that I'm learning. So I'm from Cincinnati and I moved to Atlanta. And there's like a Southern thing that the pastor has to be at everything. And so anytime I have a question, it needs to be the pastor. And so I'll try mm-hmm. and send somebody else from my team and they'll say, no, well, I don't want them. I want the pastor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so my phrase that I've been saying to people is, I'm terribly sorry to disappoint you, but I can't be there. Right.
Yeah.
And just leave it at that. Right.
Yeah. And then they get to make a decision.
That feels to me like that's setting a boundary. Mm-hmm. That's saying I'm not going to go to all these places because my two options there seem to be, I either coerce to everything and just jump into whatever they ask me to do so that I can keep everybody happy.
Right.
Or I set a hard rule and say, you know what my policy is, or the church is, like, I try and blame it on somebody else. The elders have created a policy for me that says, or my wife told me I couldn't, or those kinds of things.
So you take responsibility.
It's just
for the
very
fact that you're making a choice.
I'm so sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a great example.
No, that's helpful.
But it is the idea of setting a boundary in grace and truth.
Yeah. Yeah, so boundaries, saying no in a, it's not okay for you to ask this of me, it's not okay for you to treat me like this,
mm-hmm.
is a really healthy thing to do.
Yeah. And that's part of love.
Even if...
It's part of love.
I just want to say, even if you're wrong.
Yes. Right. and typically the people that are upset because you're setting boundaries are the people that are benefiting because you don't have them.
Oh, say that again, Ben. I need to receive it.
Right?
Say it again.
The people that begin to be upset when you're setting boundaries are the people that, what did I don't know what I
are
said.
Are benefiting because you don't have them.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful. And I like what you said, too, about even if you're wrong, like, that's part of the negotiation, that's part of the discernment, is to really own what you want, right? And be able to set boundaries. And what you're doing there is creating a culture where everybody can discern together, you know, like what's appropriate. So if you want to own your own boundaries, that's great. But then you're also, in so doing, you're inviting others to talk about what they want and to talk about, you know, like, why do you want the pastor at every event? Yes. You know, like, well, let's talk about that. That would be a wonderful discipleship conversation.
Yeah.
Probably.
So,
do you want to have that conversation?
Yeah.
Yep. Or not?
So tough love with my 11-year-old. Mm. I've mentioned this before. He keeps, he has a 30-minute limit on his screen time, and he keeps violating that limit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a dad of an 11-year-old, I can lower the boom, right? I can take away iPad. You can be grounded from
all
games.
Kinds of consequences.
I mean, I could just punish. I could just like lower the truth.
Yeah.
And you must respect my authority. You know what I'm saying? but I'm trying to figure out how to empower my son to care about his own development and wisdom and self-control as much as I do. Mm-hmm. I want to recruit him to be an active participant in his own development of not having an unhealthy addiction or attachment to screens. So when I catch him on a screen, the conversation goes something like, Deacon, tell me what's going on right now. Tell me why you're on your screen. What do you think the consequence should be? And what is the strategy you're willing to employ to help you make the decisions you know you need to make?
Mm-hmm.
And we come up with a plan, and then I ask him, Deacon, tell me, what is my goal in parenting you in this? And he's able to say to me, you want me to grow, to develop wisdom, to know how to use screens. And I said, why is that? And he says, because when I go to college, you won't be there and I'll have to make decisions on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, it's really hard to like share something with an 11-year-old because you don't know how it's going to turn out. Like, I have no idea if this is, I mean, I have no idea if this is going to work or not. I'm just saying this is the experiment of having tough love with somebody who's not responding to me, just sort of laying out expectations and saying, you know, the normal sort of grace and truth thing. I want to recruit him into his own good, but if he refuses to participate in his own good, then I share with him boundaries about, I won't, if you don't want to participate in your own good, that's fine, but here are the boundaries around me letting you harm yourself.
As an 11-year-old, it'll change when he's 20.
Yes.
It'll change when he's 30.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially for guys like you and me, Matt, who are a little feisty, like to understand that, yes, Jesus did flip the tables, but way more often than not, he didn't flip the tables.
And him flipping the tables.
So if I find myself in a pattern of table flipping... all the time. Like if I'm flipping tables every week, I'm probably not living in the posture of Jesus.
And
right.
And I think there's ways that we read into that, right? Where we see Jesus flipping tables and we think, oh, he lost his temper.
Yeah.
He didn't lose his temper.
Yeah.
You know, that's a prophetic, intentional act. Like he can just as easily go into the temple and look around.
No, but he got fired up. Home. Like he got fired up in it. We're allowed to say he got fired up in it.
He got fired up, but he didn't lose his temper. You know what I mean? Like that was an intentional act. He walked into the temple, looked around, and went
home. He didn't lose control.
And then he went into the temple and flipped the tables in an intentional act of saying, this is a prophetic denouncement of what's happening here.
Yes.
It wasn't that he lost control. It wasn't that he lost his temper. He's doing something intentionally. Like, you know what I mean? So Jesus
is
doing that.
So what I'm suggesting is that there are times when you need to intentionally flip the prophetic table.
Yeah.
Right? But if I find myself doing that every single week or every like
and
three times a month
flip
and
the
I
table?
Can't not, then I need to evaluate my posture because more often than not, Jesus didn't choose to flip the prophetic table. Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess what I want to say to Tom is there is tough love, but tough love has way more to do with you owning your own wants and desires and boundaries than you asserting and telling other people what they should want and desire and their boundaries.
Yeah. For me, tough love has often meant, and this is a phrase we use a lot in our training in Gravity Leadership Academy, is telling the truth about yourself.
Yeah.
Like that for me has been a lifeline to be like, I don't know what to do here. I'm frustrated. Yeah. I'm agitated.
And that
I don't
person,
know what's happening here.
Yeah.
I can tell the truth about my agitation. I can tell the truth about my frustration. And that opens up the space to be able to set some boundaries, you know, that kind of thing. So instead of just trusting my impressions about what needs to happen here, I can tell the truth about my response to what's happening and then open up space to say, help me see what's happening here.
Yeah. You know? So the person I was referring to, like, grilled me on our denomination's history. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I don't know. And he was like, well, you should know. And the fact that you don't is you should feel ashamed for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, hey, dude. Later, like a week later, I was like, hey, it's not okay for you to use shame on me to get me to comport to your ideas of what it means to be a good pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, I don't remember doing that. Right? Which is, by the way, that's gaslighting. And I was like, well, that's okay. You don't have to remember. I just want you to know the next time you do it, mm-hmm. I'm going to bring it to your attention because it's not okay.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I feel like that's a way of setting a boundary. Like, you can't treat me like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to shame me. You're not going to like whip me with your expectations to get me to behave the way you want me to.
Yeah.
That's not okay. So like tough love says no.
Yeah.
It says it draws in the sand and says, whoever sinless cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough love.
Yeah. And it's part of love. It's part of grace and truth. It's part of what we're talking about when we talk about that. So yeah.
And there's an enormous difference between standing against injustice and standing against people. I think oftentimes we misconstrue those two things.
Yeah.
And so we end up standing against people
rather than standing against injustice. And I think there's a way that you can walk in grace and truth where you stand against the wrong that is happening and the injustice is happening, even if it's happening to you, without standing against the person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's like... That's,
but it does take wisdom and imagination, right, to walk in all of these things.
Yeah. You have to process your own sort of triggering in the midst of it.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm finding myself, I can't not flip over the tables, well, hey, that's probably not prophetic. That's probably you just getting...
And it's probably not so much about the other person as it is about us, right?
That's right. So you got to process that. But that still leaves space to be able to speak plainly. Yeah.
And this is where communal discernment's so helpful to have friends to be able to say, I want to flip the tables right now. Like I am so angry with this person, or I'm so angry with this situation, and I don't have an imagination for what grace and truth looks like. Yes. Help me walk in this.
This is what Willard says.
We've had those conversations between the three of us often.
I mean, we've talked about our anger recently on the Practitioner podcast, Ben. Yeah. You and I.
Yeah.
This is a I don't know, just something
I'm super angry with you right now.
This is something I'm really acquainted with. Willard says that like God can be angry because he can be trusted to act righteously in his anger.
Yes. Yeah.
But we should never trust ourselves to act righteously in anger.
Yeah.
Right? That's folly. It's folly to trust our anger more than love.
Yeah.
And too often I have used my anger to justify quote tough love, which has basically just been a justification for my unrighteous anger.
You're right, for poor behavior.
Treating really people as my enemy rather than the principalities and powers.
Right. And that's what I was going to mention is Ephesians 6, right, where Paul says like humans aren't our enemies. They're if they appear to be our enemies, it means they are been co-opted by the principalities and powers.
We are seeing people from a worldly point of view.
That's
right. Paul says we no longer see people from an earthly point of view. Yep. So even cotton-headed ninny-moggins are...
I can think of a few.
They're no longer your enemy in Christ.
Yeah.
If Christ can pray, forgive them, they don't know what they do, then you can pray, forgive them, they don't know what they do.
Yes.
Because whatever you're suffering, it's less than crucifixion.
Right. Unless you're dead right now, should and then we you're not there? Listening to this podcast.
Should we in there? Like, so it's... so here, maybe a summary.
Okay.
Own what you want. Draw boundaries, even if you're not sure they're legit. Mistrust your anger.
Yes.
And trust God's love.
Yes.
And learn to see other people not as an opponent, but as someone for whom Christ died, that you can also die for them too.
Mm. Yeah. I keep thinking about, that's probably a good place to stop.
This is like when Mallory was preaching in our service, and now you're gonna preach another 17 minutes, aren't you?
the song I keep thinking of, I'll just encourage you guys to look this up, but the song I keep thinking of is by the Avett Brothers.
I thought it was going to be the Bends.
No. The song we started with Radiohead, we're ending with the Avett Brothers, but No Hard Feelings is a great song by the Avett Brothers, and it ends with this refrain that just says like, hard feelings haven't done much good for anyone, and so I'm letting them go. It's a song about death. It's just beautiful, and it ends with just this refrain that says, "I have no enemies. I have no enemies. I have no enemies. I have no enemies." Anyway,
it's a beautiful song, right?
Oh, it's gorgeous. Makes me cry. Makes me cry.
Mm. Yeah.
So anyway, that might be
maybe
a great
listen
place
to that song.
Maybe your brother can
cry with Ben Sturkey.
Can he mix that song into the outro?
I don't know. I don't know if we're
podcast?
Allowed to do that. I don't know what licensing.
So many, there's so many rules about
this
those things.
There's licensing.
You're gonna get us in so much trouble, Tebby.
Well, that's what
you
I do
get
here.
Get that.
Anyway,
what? There's probably three letters that will come after us. The ESPN or something.
ABC.
The
always
FDA.
Be
FDA.
Always be closing.
Always be closing.
All right.
All right, friends.
Tom.
Well, hey, Tom, thanks for the question.
For the
appreciate
question.
Your engagement. Hope that was helpful for you and for the rest of our listeners. Friends, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you,
So please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.